She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. This is Gina Murphy, darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, a fun and informative place where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And these days, I dare say there's lots for us to think about. Interesting times. Thanks so much for joining us and for being a part of Mrs. Green's World. It means the world to us. And thanks to one of our most loyal and longstanding partners, the Chapman Automotive Group. Every day in every way, they are doing their share and showing they care in ways that I would love to share with you on an entire show someday because of the way they have mobilized their 7 car dealerships and their employees throughout Southern Arizona to really show up and do some hard work on their own time and make a difference for where they work, their home, and our community. They're really, I'm so impressed and I'm so proud to be a part of that team. So thank you, Chapman. To learn more about them, please visit chapmantucson.com. And if you do engage with them, please tell them Mrs. Green sent you because we want to show our appreciation for them. So our show today is about sustaining ourselves, or what I call sustainability for the soul. Today we're going to talk with our guest about living from the heart because this is truly what this man does. His story is compelling and extremely important in these challenging times. When I talked to him off air, I said, timing is perfect. Please join me in welcoming Emmanuel Dogger. He has become recognized as a global humanitarian, a spiritual healer, a teacher, and a multi-best-selling author who truly walks the talk when it comes to living from the heart. Very, very, very important, like I say, in these challenging times for someone like me. Emmanuel's early challenges of growing up in a war-torn country of Lebanon have helped him develop a level of compassion and awareness that heals those who enter his space. And I can attest to the power of his presence as I was fortunate enough to spend time with Emmanuel at the United Nations last spring. It was a very powerful and impactful experience for me and for my daughter and for my son-in-law who accompanied me. So without further ado, Emmanuel, welcome to Mrs. Green's World. We made it happen.
Yes. Oh, my goodness, my friend. Thank you so much. And thank you to the listeners just holding the space and being with us today.
Yeah, it's really, really, really important. And I mean, you and I know we speak a lot of that same language about how divine timing is so much more at work than we ever give it credit for. So it's really great that you're here in 2017 with, it's a very tumultuous and for me, as I said, politically painful time. And I don't make this show about politics. I try to make it about we have one planet, we have common goals around that planet. So you and I talked about doing this show with ease and grace, and let's get on the way to doing that. And go ahead.
I was going to say absolutely, and I'm excited because, you know, even though there is a lot of fear in the collective right now, there's also an opportunity for breakthroughs to happen. I always know that when there's fear, there's actually movement, there's momentum, and when we step into it, then we can actually step into the breakthrough.
Well, things like that are food for my soul. And I need to hear them. I need to figure out how to protect myself from the fear and navigate through it because voices like mine and yours are going to be maybe more important and essential than ever before, ever. I don't know what's going to happen. But anyway, so much of who you are, I believe, and what you are doing goes back to the very formative and, from my view, very painful and terrifying times with your mom in the midst of a war in Lebanon. Most people in the United States have no clue, no consciousness, no nothing that can really relate to that. So can you share with us and take your time about what that experience was and how it really did later shape what you're doing now? Take it away Emmanuel.
Well, thank you for that. And when I share, always know that I'm sharing from a place of detachment, because I've done the work to get to the point where I can speak from a different perspective. And actually, I can look at it and understand that I chose that experience, just like each and every one of us on a spiritual level, on a soul level, chose the experiences we've had, whether they were challenging or they were easy. And our only job is to listen, to learn from the experiences, to learn the blessings, and then overcome, and then come back to our true essence, which is that pure perfection, that wholeness, that sacred I am presence. So going back to childhood, you know, from an observer's perspective, I understand that I was placed into much density. I grew up in a war-torn country, as you mentioned, of Lebanon, and every day there was uncertainty. There was no, we didn't know if we were going to have the opportunity to live the next day, or one constant that I can remember actually having was that we didn't have electricity, we didn't have running warm or hot water. I used to eat pita bread and water every single day for the first 7 years of my life. So it was definitely not the easiest of times. But one thing that I can look back on now is the love that my mom and I had for each other. And especially, you know, I can remember how much love she had for me. And I believe that as a result of that trauma, the shock that we experienced early on, it really did form a strong connection and bond that allowed us to, you know, have this ability to overcome adversity in ways that maybe someone who didn't experience that kind of trauma would be able to. So we did it together, and that was the good news. I wasn't alone. So that was one thing that I really, really appreciated. And she was very young. She was about 19, 20 years old.
Wow.
So we grew up together.
Yes.
And we lived in a convent, actually, which was actually our saving grace, because if we didn't live in that convent, who knows what would have happened. But
right.
I was the only little boy.
Yes.
Yes, yes. I was the only little boy in this convent of all nuns. And I don't know if you've ever seen The Sound of Music, but you know, towards the end when of the movie, when Maria and her family were being protected in the monastery. So this is very similar and reminiscent. It kind of reminds me, that's why that's one of my favorite movies, because it kind of reminds me of what I'm grateful for and all the things that I've overcome. But anyway, so as a result of those experiences, I had a choice. The choice was to either become someone who is jaded and upset and angry at the world, why me, and feel sorry for myself, or I had the opportunity to say, okay, well, universe, God, creator, if I am able to overcome this experience, if we are given the opportunity to have freedom and escape from this reality, I would spend the rest of my life doing what I could to help humanity. And so with that, you know, intention that I set early on, actually my mom and I set it together. And by the way, my mom, side note, she's super spiritual. She's always been super spiritual. And so for someone in that kind of world, it was a gift. And I truly believe the reason why I am who I am today was because of her openness and allowing me to just be myself and remain that open channel to spirit. But coming back to that promise, we were given an opportunity when I was 11 years old for a ceasefire happened, and we actually, through a series of events, which I could share more on another day, miraculous events, we actually escaped through a cargo boat that was only carrying you know, products and cargo, not people. So somehow, some way, my mom knew someone who knew someone who knew someone who was able to get us on that cargo to Cyprus, and then we were able to come to the United States.
And I want to ask you, with the, you were very young. It wasn't like you were 15 and could contemplate more complex issues. But even at that young age, from what I heard in your presentation at the United Nations, there was a realization on your part that this was a big ask on the part of the universe, a big ask of you, and you made some decisions when most kids are playing and enjoying their freedom and life. I mean, most kids in the United States, that's very American-centric. Many kids, millions of children throughout the world live in fear and poverty and starvation and heinous conditions that we don't even think about in this country. So I don't want to say most of us. I mean, most of us in the blessed country that we live in, it's very different. So how were you processing this at the age you were like seven, right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, that is not like the old man.
Well, believe it or not, for some reason, I can tell you, when I first came in, I did feel like I was an adult. I never really felt like I was a child.
Wow.
And then once I became older and I healed a lot of the trauma and the PTSD and everything, I actually allowed the fun, joyful kid to come out and play again. And that's what I do more of now. But as a kid, I remember, especially because my mom was so young as well, I felt very protective of her. So whenever she was crying, balled up in the corner, because we used to sleep on the cement floor, so those types of scenarios. So I just didn't really think about myself. I just was more concerned about her and protecting her. So I think because of that, I didn't really have time to think of oh, why is this happening to me or anything. I just sort of allowed myself to jump into that service role, you know?
Which is the whole thing about to whom much is given, much is expected. And there are times when I want to say, you know what, maybe I wasn't even given that. So I'll pass. I think I'll go and tiptoe through the tulips or something like that. But it was a big a big ask of you, which you have obviously responded to. What about, why was the convent safe in a country now where nothing is safe? I mean, we're killing reporters who always had safety, and we are, those barriers, the Sound of Music is one of my favorite movies. I can't even tell you how many times I've watched it. When you said that, I'm like, oh yeah, so remember that, and how terrified I was just watching them. And so how... you know, how, I forgot my train of thought because I thought literally started thinking about them in the cemetery hiding behind headstones and trying to get away. So what was my question, Emmanuel?
So the question, I believe, was that you were asking me how was
why was the convent safe?
Yes. And the reason why, well, in the beginning, it didn't feel safe because right over the walls, you know, behind the walls was, there were tanks and bombs and guns and, you know, all that stuff. But, you know, after a year and then the second year and then the third year, so it became safe because I don't know. I honestly believe that it was protected energetically, something was happening, but pragmatically, I think there was some kind of honor, that there was still some kind of honor back then where, okay, this is a holy space, we're not going to touch that. We're going to touch everything else around it, but not that. So I think that could have been going on as well. There was some kind of mutual respect there.
Okay, okay. I mean, that really, it's huge, because if not, you would have been dead. You were a young boy, and that never would have, you would have either been dead or taken away to serve in an army that you had no part of. So there was no happy ending for any of the choices out there. Mm-hmm. So in terms of the escape, talk about the transition, because here you are, you have literally grown up behind walls, in fear, in a convent. I can't, like, eating pita bread and water every day.
Yeah.
And, you know, no mattress, things that, you know, I'm not saying I ever have any idea about. What was the transition when you came into the world? What happened for you and for your mom?
So the first for the first time, and this is, I don't know why this is coming up right now, but I remember seeing stop lights for the first time ever, because we didn't have stop lights. So I'm like, you know, we landed from the airplane and, you know, we came to the Midwest. My mom's sister luckily had been married to a guy from the Midwest, and he had some pull in the local government and was able to get us a sponsorship and all that. So it was really miraculous how everything happened. They wrote a letter to the Congress and all that. So, but the good news is, you know, once we were landing, all I saw was lights, and I was so enamored and in awe of, what is this? Am I coming into a sparkled, you know, ruby and emerald city? What's going on?
You know? Oh my gosh. Stuff we don't ever think about.
Yeah. And I remember kind of going back to The Sound of Music, which is, I know how it may sound cheesy, but I do feel like I
not
lived
for
a
me.
Parallel life.
Not for
that.
Me. Yeah.
But I remember, so we moved to Indiana, which was very open fields and green and to, you know, beyond the eye can see. And, as far as the eye can see. And, I just felt how she felt in those mountains and just being able to go and be free. Of course, you know, I did have PTSD for a while and was in shock and kind of decompressing, but I still was able to kiss the grass and the ground and see the sky and listen to the birds and just be. And I think that was meditation for me. I wasn't intentional with it. I was just doing what I felt was natural. And I think that's really, you know, when we move away from computers all the time and our phones and all of that and come back to that simplicity and be in nature,
right,
we can
right.
just back to that spiritual essence of who we are without trying to force anything, just allowing it to be. And I think that was such a golden prize for me that I've never let it go.
Wow.
I've always desired be in nature, and I spend time as much as I can away from the computer and all of that.
And there's so much research about it. You know, there's now a diagnosis, and it's not a joke. Nature deficit disorder, because kids are so in their homes behind electronic devices for all the wrong reasons and all the right reasons. Sometimes it's safety issues, but there is so much compelling research that connecting with nature by a certain age and being exposed to that. I remember Heather White talked about it from the Yellowstone Forever Foundation, talked about the research of, if you are exposed with a meaningful adult before the age of, I think it is like 10 or 11, you never lose that connection. So it's I mean, for anybody that has it, it is such a healing place for me. And there are times when I just say, I have to get out in nature. And I'm a big follower of the artist's way, and they kind of mandate it. They can't make you, but they say, get out and go for an hour by yourself and be quiet and connect. Mm-hmm. And it's just very healing. And I think it's so easy to let it go. So easy to let it go.
It is. And you know what's so interesting is I did move to a completely different mindset of a country, because I should say that part of the world, which is very conservative. And so aside from, of course, healing through nature and spending a lot of time through nature, and that was so important to me, you know, in the beginning, we did get a lot of discrimination. We were the only minority in the neighborhood, you know. So that was actually nothing. You know, that to me was nothing compared to what I had gone through prior.
This is a walk in the park, literally.
It was so easy. And because of every, you know, as a young child, I was sort of taught to entertain my mom, to make her not think about the war and struggle and all that. So I was very much putting on little shows for her. So I knew what to do and to win those people over and become friends with people who are discriminating me, you know?
Yes. I mean, and certainly I never thought of that. It's like, you think that's tough? You should have been where I was. And it's like, there's a certain shield that I'm sure is a protective shield that you have to build in order to survive. And one of the things that always amazes me about Mrs. Green's world with my amazing guests is how we seem to go in a time warp. So we are coming up on the first break in about 30 seconds, right? Wow, and I don't make that up. So please stay here with me. We're going to talk more with Emmanuel about what he is doing in terms of global healing at the United Nations and other places throughout the country and the world. Stay here with me. Lots more amazing information and thoughts to share. We'll be right back.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and Speak Up networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for being with us. Joining us for this hour is Emmanuel Dogger. He is a global humanitarian, spiritual healer, teacher, and best-selling author. And he has quickly come onto the world stage, maybe quickly for us, but maybe a long time for him, through his wisdom, his healing gifts, and humanitarian work. And it's given him the opportunity to present and facilitate global healing at the United Nations in New York City, which we all need to remember is the heart of global diplomacy. It's where it happens. It happens at the World Congress and in consulates and other international events that promote world peace and healing. So once again, Emmanuel, thanks so much for being with us and for sharing your very, important and impactful story.
Thank you so much. It's just such an honor. And, you know, I know a lot of people right now are experiencing a little bit of their trauma as a result of what just happened with the elections and everything. So, I really do believe, again, this is the time for us to have that breakthrough and overcome. And I think there's goodness happening. People are coming together. And I really sense that something great is about to occur for all of us.
And, you know, we are going to talk about your energy forecast, which I said to you, I thought I knew a lot about you and your journey and your offer to the planet. But there is something we can subscribe to at your website, EmmanuelDogger.com, Energy Forecast. And you are talking there about a whole new world. And I guess part of what I want to ask you, who does, you know, you do have great healing ability, insight, and all of those things. Where is the conversation about compassion in many arenas in our country today? It seems to me that that word is seriously missing in conversations. And I'm just a personal note, I am going to work very hard on being compassionate when I want to be angry and reaching out to people who don't think like I do, trying to understand them better and help us build bridges, because it's in everybody's best interest, especially Mother Earth, if we build bridges around climate change, because things are happening there that are not so great and they're accelerating. So talk to us about the lack of compassion, or is it there more than we might see it?
Yes. So, you know, to understand, for me, I had the same exact question for a long time, especially when it came to everything that I went through. But I understand that to really experience compassion is to have a clear definition of it and then being able to step into it. So for me, I understood that I wasn't compassionate as much, but I was more of a sympathizer. So I know many of us listening right now as empaths and people who are quite sensitive to our environment or people, and sometimes we feel like we're the black sheep of the family and all of that. we are someone who tends to sympathize and we take on energy. And so those people have had an interesting time the past, for many decades, but especially the past few years leading up to this year that occurred, which a lot of people weren't really expecting. So that really threw a lot of people off, and they felt like, oh my goodness, you know, it's us versus them and me against them and all of that. And what that does is actually provide us with feedback as to whether or not we are being compassionate. So compassion, what I understand it to be, real compassion has nothing to do with sympathy. It has everything to do with looking past the story, the illusion. So, for example, let's sort of use the sitting president right now as an example.
Okay.
He is representing an archetype. He is bringing up for everyone an energy, and it's different for everyone. But for certain people, it's bringing up the archetype of maybe someone in their childhood, maybe someone in their lifetime that bullied them or made them feel less than or helpless or a victim. So it's not really about him at all. He is actually, he signed up before, we all signed up for this experience, but his soul signed up to show up for many people in that way, many cultures and many backgrounds and all of that. So he decided, I'm going to be the one to show up in this really challenging way to have these people's lives sort of be shaken up so that they can look at some of these things that they need to heal, which are maybe there was still some trauma there around childhood things. Maybe there's some compassion that can expand in one's life, and they can really take more of that role on. Now, it doesn't mean that just because we're seeing it from this more expanded perspective and not blaming, but actually seeing that there's a lesson in it, just because we're doing that doesn't mean we have to sit at home and do nothing. It can mean that, oh, wait a minute, I've been a little bit complacent. I've been a little bit lazy.
Right.
So maybe now I can take inspired action and follow this fire within me that wants to create change. So if we're seeing, for example, what's happening in the Keystone Pipeline, and then, of course, our sacred Native family and friends who were experiencing what they did this past year as well, we can use that as an opportunity to do something about it, but not from a place of victim consciousness, but from a place of knowing that there is perfection there. There's an opportunity for lessons and blessings to come forth, and we have to do something about it. We can't just sit there and watch it happen. We have to be proactive. So I think the good news is that a lot of this has moved energy for people. Now, my intention and my hope and knowing is that people will continue to build off of this energy so that it doesn't just become stagnant. Now,
right,
we
so
actually,
it's not just a march.
Yes, exactly. And the other day when there was the march, I actually was just sitting in awe and prayer and meditation so that we can use that sacred energy and magnify it and continue to do great things with it, because there are amazing people around the world who are anchoring compassion. So compassion, when you understand, is about seeing past the story, past the illusion, and the true essence of everything is whole, is complete, is perfection, no matter who or what is being presented to you, whether it's an experience or a person that's triggering you. There's a baby in there that was perfect at one time, that little beautiful bundle of joy. And when we can send love to that part of them, we don't have to agree with what they're doing now. We don't have to accept it. But we can say, okay, there's a part of them that is beautiful, that is sacred, and I'm going to see that part of them. But I'm now going to use this fire that's being burnt within me and activated within me so that I can do something in a way that's going to be productive for humanity. And this doesn't mean that we can't, again, take away from feeling angry and upset and frustrated and helpless. Those are emotions that are valid, and we need to honor them and give them the dignity and right to exist, because they're coming up as a marker, a trigger, a reference point that may have started much earlier on. Because the question that I would ask the audience now is, this is probably not the first time you felt these feelings that you experienced. Let's say if you were triggered. I know there's a lot of light workers who weren't. They were actually really happy with what happened. But for those who were really triggered, this is not the first time. You've probably had this before. So this is an opportunity to actually go back and heal it.
It's presenting us with gifts. And I will tell you, it's like you are absolutely and positively food for my soul this day in particular, because of some of the announcements. And again, I don't ever want this show to be a platform for polarization, but one of inspiration and education and information. But when you're talking about gag orders on the EPA and, you know, the head of that organization having sued it 10 times, mm-hmm. my reaction is at times visceral. Mm-hmm. And this is a reminder, because what it does, so, okay, that's good, Gina. You felt awful. It's terrible. You're angry. How are you going to rise up? How are you going to be a leader? How are you going to be a stand for something else? And I just have to comment about the march here in Tucson. It was my first march, even though I'm a child of the 60s. I never marched. And it was so much fun. It was peaceful. It wasn't hateful. People were laughing. There were kids. There were every color, shape, sexual preference. I mean, and it was, I am not exaggerating. It was a joyous atmosphere. There was not hate slogans. It was, you know, one of the kids, my Kodak moment was standing next to this little adorable young person, like so adorable. And we're marching, and we're almost to the end of the march. And together we're chanting, "No hate, no fear. Everyone is welcome here." You know what I mean? And that was the spirit that I felt. A lot of the signs were hysterical. And I sometimes, you know, at the expense of others, I admit, but, you know, things like there is no planet B. I saw a lot of signs about the environment and about human rights and about social justice. So it was not a hate rally or an anti. To me, it was about just what you're talking about. All of us tapping into, what can I do to show up differently in the world? Not against Donald Trump or for a candidate that didn't win. That's so yesterday. Mm-hmm. But what do I want to be known for? What are my values? How can I stand up and be counted? So your words are very soothing and healing to me, my friend. And I say that sincerely.
Well, I have to say also what you're doing and what we're all doing is just basically anchoring the divine feminine energy, which is the nurturer and the compassionate presence and the love. And she's making a comeback. And it doesn't mean when I say she, it's limited to female. It can be in males and females, but she's making a comeback. And it's coming with full divine force. And it's beautiful to witness.
And it is beautiful. It's like, watch out. She's coming. She's coming, and it feels really good in the form of very powerful men and women and leadership and people that I know that are like picking up their families and went to the Dakota Access Pipeline. They're homeschooled. Yep. They got in their vans and off they went. And those are exciting things. My grandchildren were at the march in Washington. And, you know, I said to my granddaughter, I said, "Maddie, you are a part of history in the making forever. That's it. Period. End of story." Mm-hmm. So the pride. Wow. And my grandson said, "Don't forget about me, Grandma. I'm there, too." And to have my 12-year-old grandson there to me was vitally important, because, you know, my daughter Rachel is certainly bringing into this time a very, very highly elevated thinker in the form of Liam. So it's really good.
Beautiful. Let's
talk a little bit about, you know, let's have the woo-woo conversation, because there was a time in my life when I thought, oh, you know, really, this is so woo-woo. And when you delve deeper into it with your intelligence, you realize that all of this work, and I would like you to, you know, to speak in particularly about the core work, it's quantum physics. It's measurable. Yeah. It's, you can literally, with certain machines see energy. I mean, there are so you can move things. I mean, I have seen so many things that I never thought I would believe. And it's really about the three components which are in all of us. To me, I say mind, body, spirit. But we are made up of our physical selves, our mental selves, and our emotional or spiritual selves. So can you talk about the woo-woo factor and is it shifting? I feel it is, but you're the one that's out there all over the world talking about it.
Yes. Well, you know, the woo-woo factor was actually a man-made, mind-made, I like to call it, protection mechanism. So it's the mind's way of trying to protect itself from maybe the fear of the unknown or things like that. So it really has nothing to do with reality. It's a false illusion that the mind creates simply to protect itself. The truth is...
I love that answer. I just have to say that. Like, that is... I'm writing it down. It's a protective device.
It is, and it actually grew and expanded more as, you know, the world became more westernized and things like that. But prior to that, our indigenous cultures and, you know, so many different scientific methods were based off of astrology and numerology and days. I mean, it's just very...
Sacred geometry.
Very, yes, sacred
cities
geometry.
Were built
it's in everything.
On it.
Exactly, and it's in every cell of our being. It's in every fiber of our being, that pattern of pure perfection. And so when we are saying woo-woo, that's actually, if you think about it, is the woo-woo. The truth is that when your awareness is fully present in this moment, you become the most spiritual being in the universe. When you're fully present in your five senses and you're acknowledging and honoring both your left brain, which is the pragmatic, the analytical, the organized part that does need to have structure, so we honor that. And then, of course, the right brain, which is the spiritual and nurturer and the creative and beauty and all of the artists tend to have. So when we combine both of those, and it's so important to do so, then you have real palpable change. And I see it also in a lot of new age communities where they focus so much in the head in the clouds type of talk and mindset that the left brain gets upset and is like, oh, well, you know how they say we need to try to get rid of the ego, we need to try to get rid of this and try to do that and try to do this. And what happens is it's going to resist and fight back and become even louder until we love it and honor it. So the healing, the core work that I came up with many years ago, really is such a thorough modality because it addresses and it uses both the left brain and the right brain. So it allows us to use empowered questions so that the left brain can sort of have a ability to be organized and structured and also have the ability to expand out of its sort of hamster wheel type of thoughts. But at the same time, we also use the quantum physics energy, the principles that, you know, there is no such thing as anything that's solid. That's actually an illusion. Everything is energy. Everything in your body, in your mind, rocks. Everything is just how condensed they are, but everything is energy. So, and we've seen that. I mean, science has proved that. There's no denying that. So when we can just tailor to all of it, then you can have that healing. Then you can have the understanding that, oh, now I can work with the principles instead of trying to negate them and say, well, I don't want to take responsibility for my own life, so I'll just blame everyone else. Well, that can be easy, but eventually you'll start struggling with that and it'll feel really uncomfortable. And then you'll say, oh, I don't like this feeling. I want to feel better. And then you'll come back to it in your own time and you'll have your awakening. The awakening can be easy. The awakening can be challenging, but the good news is you will awaken. And
right.
I think this is all what life is. It's all about coming back to that awareness of self, of who we are, and who we are all together as one energy.
And you have actually, in my opinion and the opinion of many others, dedicated yourself to getting people back to their sacred core of all of these things that's already in there and that we just have to not be afraid to look and go deeper and be still and be quiet and really tap into that. So to me, it is really, I read a quote about you and I thought, this is the essence of who he is. So my friend, one more break coming up. It's like, what?
I know.
So how does, when we come back, I'd like you to talk a little bit about, if you will, how does what you do tie into climate change and preservation of the planet, connecting that human awakening to consciousness and connection, you know, to Mother Earth. We have lots more to talk about, everybody. Time is flying. Important work happening here. Please stay here with me. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everybody. I am Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World, and thank you for being a part of our world. Joining us for this hour is Emmanuel Dogger. He has become recognized as a global humanitarian. And if you're listening for the past 40 minutes, you know why. Spiritual healer, teacher, and multi-best-selling author who truly walks the talk when it comes to living from the heart, a place that we need to really get in touch with very quickly, if you ask me. He comes from a war-torn country of Lebanon, where he was literally living in a convent for 7 years with his mother under the most extreme living conditions, to say the least. And now he has dedicated his life to healing and to helping all of us be body, mind, and spirit. Emmanuel, thank you so much for taking your time to be here.
And my pleasure.
Let's talk a little bit about your thoughts on how the work you do is related to climate change and preservation of the planet, because I know that you do.
Yes, and that's so important. And the way that I would invite the listeners to think about the planet is that it's a reflection of you. Oh. So everything outside of us is actually a amplified reflection of what's going on inside. So a lot of times, a lot of people that I work with, whether it's, you know, humanitarian work overseas with the refugees, or it's just working with clients or big companies and all of that, they often ask me, what can we do about the world and the environment? And so my first thing that I tell them is to take care of yourself, to heal yourself, to get yourself into a state of loving and nurturing and making yourself a priority. You know, we've been conditioned to believe that that's selfish because it's something that, you know, I don't know why, but for some reason it's a little bit taboo, or it was taboo, to take good care of yourself and make yourself a priority, because what would people think? But now people are understanding that it didn't work very well. You know, it's very honorable and noble, but if you're not taking care of yourself, your well-being, your health, your needs, your desires, your, you know, wanting to receive and experience love, if you're not giving yourself all of that, then your world around you will mirror the depletion or the lack of you not doing that for yourself. So we want to make sure that that's where you're starting. And a lot of times people say, wow, okay, this empowers me. It's not about me having to sign up and you know, go overseas and start doing things. Although eventually, if you're giving to yourself so much and enough, you want to share it.
Right.
That's the way we want to approach. That's the way we want to move forward. So for me personally, once I started to learn that, because it was very hard, as I mentioned earlier, I was taught to make others a priority before me. And it wasn't something that was said verbally to me. It was just how I, as an empath, someone who's sensitive, chose to just show up. And it was great. It taught me so many lessons, but it also left me with scoliosis. It left me with a speech impediment. It left me painfully shy that I couldn't even speak in front of people. It left me very, very, there was a lot of things that I experienced as a result of it because I was not taking care of myself. And it wasn't at the fault of anyone, not even myself. It was just what it was. So I'm sure many people right now can listen to that, whether you've been married for many years or you had children or whatever, and you kind of just put your well-being, your happiness a little bit on hold in order to take care of everyone else. So I'm inviting you right now to consider and try something different. Just be willing. So if that means, adding one new thing into your daily routine that's going to make your heart sing and make you feel really good. Maybe sometimes, I talk to a client and they say, I don't remember what I like to do. Well, sit back and write down, some things that you used to do as a kid or as a teenager, and really reflect and try to get that down on paper. So then you can see if that makes sense in your present reality, if you'd still like to do more of that. For me, one of the things I love, and I mentioned earlier, is nature. And that's me loving myself. So when I'm in nature, I'm intentional. I'm saying, this is me breathing deeply, looking at the sky, sitting and just observing and being with nature. This is me loving myself. I'm so grateful. And when you have that intention, then you start filling your energetic cup. You start to fill it, and then eventually it'll start overflowing, and then you start getting little nudges and inner calls like, oh, well, I'm so blessed. I would really like to start going and, volunteering for Red Cross or going to, Big Brother, Little Brother, or Big Sister, Little Sister, whatever it is in your community, you'll start to feel that inner call. But it all starts with you, and that really is a direct result of how the world and the environment is being affected. So when you take care of yourself, the environment around you will also heal.
And that is such a great answer. I mean, it is. In my book, I wrote, the last chapter was sustainability is an inside job. And what you said is it's so on point. You start to take care of yourself and you realize things like, when did I connect with nature? You realize you sit down at a fast food restaurant and you look and you say, what am I putting in my body? Mm. What am I fueling my body with? Which then in turn helps you make healthier choices, which then supports healthier growing of food. I mean, it's such a chain and a pathway to sustainability for yourself. So you feel better, and it immediately begins to impact Mother Earth from where I sit and the planet and all of these things. My newsletter that I wrote today, I think you'll get a kick out of it. It's coming out tomorrow. And of course, we're doing a pre-record, so it'll be timing off a little bit. But I wrote my newsletter and it said, did you have milk with your pesticides this morning? Because I like to get people's attention. And it's always a fun, informative newsletter, but, we are what we eat. What are you eating? And that's what you're saying is take care of yourself first, and a lot of other things will follow. It's not like, I've got to preserve the planet today.
Yeah, because that's overwhelming.
It's overwhelming. And it shuts you down.
Yes, exactly.
So one of the things that I think is really important now, and maybe has always been, we have become so isolated, so living in our neighborhoods, so living behind fences, behind closed doors, all of that breakdown of neighborhoods. I mean, when I was a kid, we got home, did our homework, and then we hit the streets. And we had a wide range. We were never scared. We knew what time we had to be home. And that just really pretty much doesn't happen in the United States anymore. But how important is the work you are doing about creating connection? That's what I love about your site. You want to bring people in and connect them from all over the world. How important is connection, whether it's with Emmanuel Dogger or Mrs. Green or the man in the moon?
Yes, it's actually in the book that I wrote, it's one of the top five most important things for us to create
and
greater
talk about your book.
Prosperity.
It fits.
Oh,
no, it really does fit.
Yes, it's, you know, it helps us create greater prosperity for all. It helps us create greater freedom and connection and love and inspiration and creativity. That whole community is just so important. And the thing is really important for me is that we are all in this together. You know, as you know, I'm sure a lot of people, because of the work that you do, they want to sometimes put you on a pedestal and see you as their teacher or guru or whatever you want to call it. But the truth is, we're all in this together. We are all here holding hands side by side. And this, I believe, is the new way. This is the new way. And I think a lot of the reason why many people had issues with the spirituality and the woo-woo was because of the guru effect, of the idea that there was, okay, there's a caste system, and that's just not able to continue anymore. I just don't see, I see it as obsolete almost. I don't know if it's my generation or whatever, but we just don't see that. We don't see colors, we don't see gender, we just see the essence of one another, and that we are all in this together. So one of my biggest intentions is, although a lot of my generation, the millennials, we have this understanding that you know, nothing phases us, it's all good, it's all normal, you know, spirituality, awesome, not spiritual, that's okay too. There is that whole, everyone's using their computers or their apps and all of that. So my intention is to actually use those very things, like social media, apps, things that actually those people would use, and anyone, you know, not just millennials, but anyone who was sort of getting so involved in those things, actually bringing us all together through community, through the understanding of we are all in this together, through positive insights, messages, even if it's just, you know, you just whiz through it and look and you see, okay, you know, this inspiration, whatever, it actually sinks into your subconscious and it affects your day. And then you go to the grocery store or the restaurant and you're smiling, or you leave a nice little extra tip more than usual, or whatever it is that makes you feel good and allows you to pass on that joy and that feeling good. It's a domino effect. So there's ways to do that. And I like to do it in person very much. It's very important for me. But I equally do it as well in social media, on the computer, because we want to make sure we get all aspects. We don't want to leave anyone behind.
And the thing about, I just encourage people who are, this is touching their soul, it's piquing their curiosity, they disagree with it, whatever it is, you know, the reaction you're having, go to Emmanuel Dogger's website, and I want to spell the name. It's D-A-G-H-E-R. And, of course, I never asked you if I was pronouncing it right, but I think I am.
Pretty close, yes.
So tell me, say it. I mean, it's like that's how I say it, and feel free.
Well, I love it. It's a more aristocrat version, but it's just regular, like Dagger.
Dagger. Oh, my gosh. No, I like Dogger better.
Yes,
I'm sticking with Dogger. I don't like Dagger. maybe it is the more important way to do it, but... You say something on your website, which a lot of my spiritual journey had to do with Reverend Michael Beckwith at Agape, the International Spiritual Center, who really helped me learn the difference between religion and spirituality, and they are vastly different, and who also talked about affirmative prayer and its power to heal everything. Begging for forgiveness, asking for mercy, no. But really coming from prayer in the light and with the power that it has, and knowing that we're not separate, it just really does transcend religion. It doesn't exclude religion, but it does transcend it from where I sit in this chair this day. So can you talk a little bit about that, spirituality versus religion? And you've got to know that we only have about 5 minutes left.
Absolutely.
I feel like I sound like I'm whining.
No, it's beautiful, and it's a very important question. So from, just again, from experience, from being someone who has many relatives who tend to be extreme in, you know, born again Christian or whatever, so I understand it very well. But one thing that I understand is that there's a lot of fear usually involved in it, and that's the fear that drives someone to move out of their heart and into their mind. So to me, the way that I see it is religion is very mindset, and then a spirituality is very heart set. It's that simple. So you go, spirituality is a feeling. So does it feel expansive? Does it feel enlightening? Does it feel good? Does it feel like it's making your heart sing? That's spiritual. It can be sitting with a group of girlfriends laughing your butt off, or it could be sitting under a tree just relaxing. It could be all of that. You don't have to be meditating on top of a mountain, although you can. You don't have to. You can do it in every moment simply by smiling a little bit more, or doing an act of kindness for someone that you don't know. So it could just be in everything. And I think spirituality is a feeling, and it's connecting to your true essence, which is always that expansion, that joy, that love. And then religion is simply that fear attached to spirituality. It's that little block, it's that protection that wants to make things a little more structured, a little bit more traditional, so that things can be passed down. And the mind loves that, and we have to honor that as well. That's why I did study, you know, world religions in college, and I understand all of them, and I honor all of them, and they all have beautiful things in them. But if we allow ourselves to be attached to the story that this is better than this is, that's when we start moving away from spirituality.
Got it. And, you know, I want to just, you know, talk about your book for a minute, because it seems to me the name of it is Easy Breezy Prosperity, and it's the five foundations for a more joyful, abundant life. And one of the pages that I marked, which is so, you know, that expression about dance like no one's watching.
Well, oh, yeah.
What book do you know has something in it called the gratitude dance? I mean, that's something that stuck out for me, because it's a very, even for me, I'm very outgoing, I'm very, you know, social, but I dance like no one's watching, and I want to make sure no one's watching. It's like, it's awkward, it feels weird, but when I do it and get into it and I'm standing in front of the TV or something, it's like, thank God no one's watching, but it sure as heck makes me feel good. So I want to do a shout out for the book. Before we have to get off the air, and I mean, it's available on Amazon. Yep. I mean, you could just find it and put
Barnes
it in there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not hard to find. Let's close with, if you can, I'm going to do a shout out for the next two shows and your social media. Yeah. All of those are at Emmanuel Dagher, D-A-G-H-E-R. You and I will have that joke forever. Mrs. Green calls me Emmanuel Dagher.
And I love that.
But it's Facebook, Emmanuel Dagher. I'm going to keep saying that forever. One.
Yeah, I love that.
And Emmanuel Dagher on Twitter. And Emmanuel Dagher Official on Instagram. And Official on Instagram. And our next week's show is going to be another great one. I cannot wait. It's a woman named Cy Montgomery talking about the soul of an octopus and what we can learn from the octopus. And then this Tuesday, a great show for in and around the Southwest, Gabe Thumb and Sam Sanford from Pima Association of Governments, talking on pedestrian safety, which matters all over the country as more of us get to the streets, how it's measured, what we need to know. But what is your, you have the rest of the show, and I thank all my guests, but what are one or two calls to action? And feel free to invite them into your world, that you would say, your takeaway from this show, please consider X from your word.
Well, first and foremost, I wanted to thank you, my friend, for all the service you're offering humanity. Thank you so much. I know sometimes we just do it and we forget what we're doing, but I'm just really honoring you and thanking you. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And thank you to the listeners for also being here and doing the work. Just by listening, you're actually doing the work.
Talk about ease and grace. Yes, this was ease and grace.
Yes.
And then the takeaway.
Ease and grace. And the takeaway today is to be gentle with yourself. You know, we tend to be in a society where we're so judgmental of ourselves. You know, we've probably mastered not being so judgmental with others, but we are with ourselves. So just be gentle with yourself. Understand that, again, that's just the mind, that little child thinking that they did something wrong. So just protect your, so it does that to protect itself. So send it love, gratitude, like a little kid, as you would. You know, you wouldn't punish a little 3-year-old.
Right.
You'd send them love and let them know all is well, and let them move their tantrum.
Give
yourself
a hug.
Yes.
Thanks, Emmanuel Dagger. Thanks for showing up in my world.